for today's meeting.
I think so. We still have some people joining.
We're up to 33.
33? And again, if you're still entering the room, the link to mark your attendance is in the chat. It's also in your email. As a quick reminder for all those who are coming in, please make sure that you are logged into your EKU account to properly mark your attendance. Give a couple more minutes to complete attendance.
We're up to 47.
47, okay, perfect. All right. Next item on the agenda is to go ahead and approve the minutes from August 13th. Can I have a motion to approve August 13th's minutes? I got Senator Stevenson moved, seconded by Ray. Any discussion regarding the minutes? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and post the link to vote to approve the minutes. We're going to try to make today as efficient as possible. You're not getting an email?
Yeah.
Mike, Senator Austin's not receiving emails? Were you able to mark it in the chat by any chance?
No, I didn't sign into that, so.
I was just thinking as a fail safe just in case.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm going to send you a personal one.
So we can go move on from that. Moving to the administrative reports, I'm going to stop sharing my screen and I will turn over the meeting space to President McFadden. Sir, are you available with us?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, everybody, hear me okay? Thumbs up, yes.
Sounds good.
I apologize for not being with you in person back today, and just didn't have time to travel, so I've got a meeting right after this and just finished up one. I did submit my report. Those changes as well as being engaged in the And then the last thing has to do with commencement exercises. That's kind of been a little bit of a moving target up till now. We're seeing the RSVPs for those events. But please note in the report the changes to the commencement schedule for the fall. There will be more communication. Please expect that you'll get a lot more communication about this from the institutional level communication and from college level communication. And please note that will be in the EKU Center for the Arts for those events. And so excited to see the commencement season upon us yet again. And then, of course, just some things that are kind of some updates for things that are going on from a dates perspective, things that are going on campus. So please note those as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take any questions that may be from the floor or others with us going on here on Zoom.
Scanning for questions. Senator Howell?
So, good afternoon, President Patton. Happy to have you with us. On the new scholarship model, I should probably know EKU's tuition schedule better than I do, but can you discuss those scholarships in terms of equivalent things to like full ride, half ride? Just give me a sense of what these scholarships mean in terms of attendance.
Sure. So your Regents Award is effectively the we don't do full rides. If you take a chance to do some reading on the budget reconciliation bill last year, going up to cost of attendance now is going to have to be something that's very actively managed for students who still qualify for Pell funding. So you can see that the Regents Award is kind of targeted to be that top level award, the quote unquote full. Get right close to that full ride. Your President's Award gets you at kind of the three-quarter award. The Eastern Award is the half award. The Excellence Award is getting you about a third. And then the Promise Award is for all. And you can see that effectively is going to be any student who is qualified to be admitted to Eastern State University will qualify for that award. So that's kind of the distribution. Now, when you look, start putting housing and dining on the equation, we'll see students that have a bigger impact. But please note that this is just one part of the equation for a student to calculate their funds here. And so from their federal funds to their state funds to the institutional funds to the foundation funds, all those pieces are going to get for each student. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions online or the in-person meeting? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. President, for taking the time. I know you've got a busy schedule, so any time that we can have with you, it's appreciated.
I appreciate everyone.
And pivoting to the Provost report. Provost Ziegler, are we around in the space?
Yes, I am.
All right, it's all yours, Provost.
Absolutely. So you have the written report. I'm not going to bore you by reading that to you or repeating everything in it. One thing I did want to highlight is the extensive amount of policy work that we have been doing. Since I sent the report, actually, one of those policies has gone from comment period to final. So we're moving pretty quickly on those. As you know, several of them are motivated by a compliance deadline of January 1st, 2026, based on HB 424, which requires us to develop performance and productivity metrics in terms of our annual evaluation of tenured faculty. Lisa Kay did a fantastic job for leading these efforts within the role. I'm very grateful to her and any member of the faculty drafting teams that moved so quickly on this. They developed a really nice performance metric rubric for us, and we've also incorporated existing productivity standards. So we were already well ahead of this policy, and we continue to be. And again, I'll take any questions about that, but I did want to commend all of those drafting teams.
All right. Scan for questions from the Zoom meeting as well as in person. All right, Senator Stevenson.
Not really a question, but my faculty and department asked that I keep reiterating it'd be really nice to have when policy changes are sent out that we have kind of a strike-through version to compare I said I would share that, so please share.
I'm gonna go make a note of that so we can work on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I've got a statement on permanent, there's something I did not say, and piggyback on the provost comments. We do have a lunch and learn schedule tomorrow. Hospital 424, Hospital 4, and kind of legislative updates are part of that conversation. So if anyone here wants to kind of dive a little deeper on that, we'll be having lunch and learn. I'm sure you'll preview that during your time here. So.
Absolutely. Thank you again for that reminder. Any other questions for the provost? I have Senator Notway.
Yeah, while we're here, I was wondering if Provost Ziegler could summarize for everybody what the productivity standards are that are outlined in some of the policy changes.
Yes, so one draws from the university scorecard that was approved by the Board of Regents. That is a 5-year goal of each college having an average credit hour production of 300 credit hours per term per faculty member. That is aggregated, so in the productivity metrics, that is stated as a university item, not as an individual faculty item. It's really important for me to emphasize that because we're going to have a lot of balancing out of workload. We have indicated that our goals for minimum enrollments in classes would be the 25-20, 12-8 that we have been using for some time now. And I'm trying to think if there were any others, and Colleen can help me out here if I'm missing something. But those were the main metrics based on the scorecard and what we've already been doing in terms of credit hour production. There are some other parts of the scorecard where we will be able to capture research productivity, et cetera, but we've not put that forward to the legislature as part of our productivity metric. The board will review and consider these in its meeting on November 12th.
Thank you, Provost. Any other questions from the Zoom room or in person? All right, well, thank you so much, Provost. I know too, as well, you have a busy schedule, so we appreciate your time.
Absolutely, it's always a pleasure to be here.
All right, now Faculty Regent Novit, if you'd like to come up.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see, the board has not met either in committee or by the full board since our last Faculty Senate meeting. I had originally predicted that we would have a budget meeting, but that actually is it's been pushed back. We will be having one, but not before the full meeting on November 12th. I submitted my report with sort of some brief updates and some predictions on what I understand will be on the agenda. I'll take any questions or concerns people have. I don't think I see anything, right? Okay, I'll just put out a quick shout out. Regent Eves and I will be having a conversation with the faculty on November 12th. November 20th. The board meeting is on November 12th. We'll be meeting in the faculty lounge. I'll get plenty of information out through EKU Today and such soon, but I encourage you and your faculty to come. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Regent Noblet. All right, I'm gonna share my screen so we can kind of track where we're at on the agenda. We're gonna go ahead and hand it over to any other faculty questions regarding administrative reports. We've pretty much covered those. All right, Student Government Association leadership, are we on line anywhere? It doesn't look to be so. So Colleen, I see you right there. If you are ready, we can hand over the screen to you if you wanna put your presentation on.
That sounds perfect.
We might have to allow sharing access. That's completely my fault.
I just sent it for you, so if you'll okay with that, then I think we'll be good to go.
I was gonna say, would it be easier?
Should be good.
You should be able to share, but I can also pull it open on my side as well if that's easier for you.
How does that look for you all?
That looks perfect on our side. That works perfectly.
Okay, perfect. I'm really happy to be here. We have quite a few changes in movements, both philosophically and organizationally.
facially in my area. I feel a little bit bronchitis, so I apologize if I sound a little raspy during this. But I want to just give a brief overview, a very light first blush at what we're working on. We've been reaching out to faculty on a lot of these various programs in small pockets, but I thought it would be helpful for the faculty senate at large to kind of see where we're going and where we're moving. Because spaces is important to everyone. It needs your physical space for your office. It needs the space in which you teach and your lab space. It also is where you host academic conferences and your colleagues, as well as what our students use it for and our general community. And so I just wanted to kind of formally introduce this to you all. And then at any point, I'm going to RTC you all raise your hand, but John will just kind of monitor that for me, and I'll run through this, and then if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Absolutely.
I serve the role of Chief of Staff for the President, but in addition as Chief Communications Officer. And so on the right side, I've always had Communications and Brand Management and WEKU under that, as well as special large projects. But one thing that became very clear is that conferencing events, speech utilization, customer PR, facilitation center, we always previously entertained Watson, Dr. Watson, maybe wasn't quite the same wheelhouse she had student life and student affairs, but these topics were far more of a community and campus-wide, and needed a little more of an institutional approach. And so workforce was the conferencing events. We felt that had a much stronger tie over in Dr. Watson's shop. And so Dr. Brad Hall is leading up that workforce development, so that no longer is under Jill Price. That's now Dr. Watson, Dr. Watson area with Dr. Hall leading that charge. But for us, and in my area, the Chief of Staff at JCOMS now has that whole portfolio of what I'm calling hospitality space. That's informal, that's not a official title. But it does kind of encapsulate conferencing events, facial visions, and the art and facilitation center. And so what we are doing right now, we have three major charges for our 25-26 year. That's, I've been working hand-in-hand as co-chair with Brian Mackinan. Dr. Mackinan and I have been happy to have that sergeant on the team. And I cannot tell you how impressed we are with their understanding of us and their willingness to really open up and talk with many different communities across campus, including a variety of faculty participatory communities. And so campus master planning is something where we're about 80% complete. Many of you at convocation saw what was that first blush communication with campus after a series of small meetings that happened throughout the summer. And from that, we'll be doing our final community meeting in November for community at large, Madison County Extended. Anyone is welcome to come to that. You maybe did not on campus get to attend at convocation. And then we will have a final presentation to the Board of Regents in February. And I don't want to go through the full presentation because that's okay if the community night or regarding to make convocation, but some of the early takeaways that we're seeing is that our academic and general spaces need to be reimagined. And that does not necessarily mean they all need massive investments. But from our class size to our locations to our tech setup to the flexibility of the space to go from a lecture to more of a breakout session, we in a variety of ways are not meeting the industry standard on a national level where you would like for not all of our spaces, that's not realistic, but for our high producing, high volume spaces in particular to be operating, there's a new way that we need to look at our workforce buildings, like the Combs building, for example. That's a really good example of one that sees all kinds of students. That's just a workforce of a spot that really needs to be looked at. And so they've done a great job of examining that and giving us some options. EKU is number two, overstocked with facilities. And when you have too many facilities that you're maintaining, you have a hard time keeping up with them all. And I think Brian Mackinan can more than any of you in the buildings to attest to that. One of the things, because of performance funding, one of the items that you were given extra points for were for square footage metrics. Well, our square footage metrics and the amount we're receiving on performance funding for having more square footage of campus is actually costing us more than the value we're getting from the performance funding. And so when you look at buildings like that are basically mothballed, like Memorial Science, more where, you know, right now we're entering that space that we need in December, it's time for us to look at that space and say, let's take that down. We have some individuals and spaces that we shouldn't have students, faculty, or staff in from ADA compliance, from a staffing. We need to get and address those issues as well. And in some of the cases, recommendations for raising those buildings are on the recommendation list. So we have a lot of square footage, a lot of it used, a lot of it used for overflow areas, and that's those buildings that we're going to be addressing in the campus master plan. We also, with those, with certain buildings being raised, answering the charge to have more flat outdoor usable space, pavilions, amphitheaters, places for students to gather, both faculty and staff, the very good that all you love those meetings, but we need more flat space to be able to engage, and so that's something we'll be working on. The next thing in our group of topic roles is our space utilization inventory mapping. And Jess and Ainsmer has done an outstanding job of really being in all of your all spaces with more building coordinators and really walking through what are offices that are vacant, what are offices that are filled, what are auditoriums being used, how often are they being used, what hours are they being used for, who is using them, why are they using them. And through that assessment, we have a very, very robust understanding now of every single room, including a custodial room or an auditorium, of what we have on campus and the usage of that. And that is helping with the project that the provost is working on with regards to our scheduling, getting people in the right spaces, including nice classrooms and tech-filled classrooms. And so that's something about just understanding people's usage is a red line, and it's very, very helpful. It's not data we had before. And so from there, we are inventorying those spaces now at the next level with campus partners to talk about, okay, which rooms need to be fully teched, fully audio, to give the very best experience for faculty. Which rooms, not just academic tech, but if you were to take a group to King Johnson, if you were to take a group to Perkins, if you were to take, and we're using these large spaces, how can we make sure they have the best tech set up in those places? Furniture. We're doing a huge move about furniture and identifying what furniture needs to be replaced. Do we need to be surplusing furniture just, you know, for a limited day? Is it time for reinvesting furniture in spaces? What's the furniture standard for that particular building? Floor layout, especially when you have a lot of not everybody can just set a room up the way they want because the tech doesn't face that way or fit that way. And so creating layouts and best practices for how the space can be maximized are things that we're looking at. And finally, ensuring students are intentionally the best space. Right now, it's a free-for-all. You get to 25 flat first, you win, is kind of where we're at. But what we really need to be saying is, what are those special spaces that the music department needs? Because they actually have to have an orchestra show. They have to fit so many people on a stage. We can't just move them around to any room. They're a little different. So giving intentionality to the spaces and purpose to some of those spaces is something that we are working on. Our early takeaways are, we believe our spaces on this campus are heavily used. People tell me all the time, rooms are busy, these rooms are busy, but the data does not show that. Some places are very busy, but the majority of our spaces, especially our large classroom buildings, are at a very, very minimal use. Very specific times are busy, but across the board, we have way more space, and definitely based on the national average than we need. And then we need to be intentional to ensure all employees and students are in the best space. And that might mean that people that are in nice spaces, we may need to make some modifications to the space that they're in and change them to a different office to allow us to take people out of really bad spaces and put them into appropriate spaces. And so those are things we're working through in our Whitlock project. We'll be working on that in Stratton and a few other buildings as we continue to go through this process. Finally, our space preservation and event guidelines. For conferencing and events, we are at a lot of different people booking lots of different spaces. And while we've attempted to get better at that, we are in no way excelling in that space. And so we are currently going and creating guidelines for event hosting. And those event guidelines are things that we are going to bring to this group because there are going to be a lot of things that affect
all employees because they're used to getting things comped, being able to have certain groups, and quite candidly, between legal compliance and insurance compliance, and our best use practices, we are not consistent, and that is going to put us into a place where we do not want to be as an institution. And so we're making sure that both campus understands that that is pretty similar when the brand guide rolled out. That'd be very similar to that. Instead of us just saying, oh, well, we never hold haunted houses or never hold haunted trails. That's really not true, but we say that, and then all of a sudden somebody gets to do it, and everyone says, well, maybe do it, and I can't. That's a really silly example, but a real example. And I think that those are things that us clarifying for campus is going to help us understand that needs our spaces. And then understanding the intentional role of hosting events on campus. Right now, in most of our scenarios, BKU is paying people to come be at this campus. They, even though they pay a fee, they are nowhere near industry standard and nowhere near comping what it just takes for us to actually host those events. And so as a community and a campus, we need to have a conversation about what are events with regards to enrollment and recruitment, what are events with regards to the community partner, and where does the line on pricing and services come with that. So I think our takeaways on that is the consistency of how we handle them across campus, and we're renting out our facilities at a So that's a quick snapshot of what we're working on in our space area. I've been so impressed with how everybody could work with us. We'll continue to message out as soon as we have some of these documents out of more finalized. But if you have a you already are aware of something, you're like, oh, how does this affect me? Please feel free to just reach out and start. That's it for me. Any questions?
Well, thank you, Colleen. I see a question from Senator Pfeiffer.
Hello, how are you? I cannot hear you. Can anybody else hear me?
No. Senator Pfeiffer, you're muted. I don't know if... there we go. Gotcha.
All right. Sorry about that. It's been a while since I had a mic not functioning on this room. I appreciate the acknowledgement that spaces are sort of, you know, first come, first serve on 25 Live, regardless of whether or not that really makes a lot of sense for what we're trying to achieve. And I think that is relatively new. My recollection is that spaces were primarily sort of coordinated through the Dean's Office of College, maybe an appropriate Vice President's Office in Richmond spaces. I think those officials tend to have the best understanding of the kind of, you know, life of their colleges or spaces and kind of organic needs and who customarily uses what spaces, you know, for their programs. Are we going to be returning to a model where spaces are going to be coordinated a little bit more locally? Or is this going to remain, you know, something else?
That's a good question. I definitely, we will keep it centralized. And really, that's less for scheduling, but for safety and security. Of knowing who has what spaces on campus, not having two folks at the same time in different systems. But with regards to the best use, that's definitely going to be engagement across campus. And I know Provost Hill and I are going to talk about that. We have two examples just this semester where we had located a class in a certain spot, but yet we had a much better location for them. But they were in a spot that I could only have a different group use because of the uniqueness of the space. And so we were able to get that straightened out. I think there'll be more collaboration in that space as we're setting schedules. Is that Matthew laughing?
Sorry, yeah. The spaces that are being utilized, I think the biggest challenge is that these spaces are being utilized locally, and with the centralized look, it becomes more difficult to...
Could you define local? Both of you use that word locally. Define what that means for
me. Programmatically, I think, you know, I look at all of these programs, and we have storage needs, we have equipment needs, we have labs, we have spaces, and I understand that there organization, it's the challenge to match what is known at the smaller levels in being utilized with the picture and the vision of the university that doesn't know the programs as well. That's the challenge.
Yeah, I hear that. I completely agree. And I don't think, what I don't want anyone to hear is my arm of the nation that we are blindly saying that we know best in this space. I think this is just a conversation we haven't really had as an institution to say, okay, when we have a priority, whether it's a community priority or an academic, how do we balance all of those things together? I think that there's some points you need on both sides and fair perspective on both sides that if you sat on the other side of the table, you may have maybe the exact same reaction that I think you just want to make sure we can work together. There are some spaces that have to be restricted and taken offline, 100%. And then there are spaces that we have to use because they offer the most custom space, the most breakout space, or they have the best parking, or they have other things that are factors, the right auditorium or shell or whatnot. So we definitely want to work with everybody on that. That centralized is a national standard, and there's a reason for that from the safety and security.
And Senator Pierce, I see you have a question as well.
Can she stop sharing so we can see the people?
Is Colleen, is there any way you can stop sharing your screen? I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, the question is, does this include like the campus rec center at all? Because they are renting out spaces that are high usage during the week by students, and they're renting them out to outside soccer leagues. So the example I have for you is the Mac Court. It is being used by a soccer league, soccer group, whatever. It's Monday through Thursday from 5 to 8, which is high usage for students. And there is a lack of space for student athletic activities during that time. And there was no announcement to the students, hey, we're going to be losing this space for something. Plus, they also have it on Saturdays. And this happened last spring, and it's happening again this spring. And it's kind of like the students are paying a fee to use that sports facility, and they are being not allowed to use part of it.
So I think this is a very good example where that group is localized. Campus Rec is an auxiliary, and they believe that decision is, and that's on institutional direction. And that's a really good example of the flip side. They don't come through conference events and spaces, they vote on their own. And I think having some institutional consistency there will help with that. So that's definitely part of our conversation.
So basically what they're doing is they're selling the space for their budget purpose, is that word is not
low. I can't speak for them because they right now aren't in our structure, but that's exactly the kind of conversation we want to have. And that's a really good example of local decision points that maybe an institutional.
Reiterate the question, which is the funds for that, as far as you know, are just going straight to the rec center?
Well, they're an auxiliary. So that's how an auxiliary model works. There's a student budget, and then there's a membership. People pay memberships.
Okay, so they're also selling weekends and other things for other tournaments and stuff like that. So as a sponsor for the fencing club, it's an issue because we use space in there, and it's making it hard for us to access.
Sorry, Senator Howe, I see you also have a question.
Hello. Going back to the master plan discussion, I've had this conversation with a couple other places, but I think it'd be beneficial to the whole Senate here as well. Can you talk about the master plan, in particular, kind of the direction for the physical plan of the university, we're thinking of going forward? In particular, I'm bringing this up because 10 years ago, the big discussion was about moving everyone to the same side of the bypass, and we are now talking about building the College of Education on the other side of the bypass. So we kind of reverse what our plan was from 10 years ago. Where are we now planning to go?
Is your question? I think the answer to that question is we want to be able to use our best spaces and places in the restricted budget that we have. So we know that the General Assembly is probably our last year for a while, that there'll be an investment. So obviously the proposed EKU Palm is our focus there. Model going on the other side of campus or the state request due to the traffic issues that impacted bypass. And the safety issue for the students being right there on that very busy corner. Anyone who has been through a shutdown due to a seminar, you know, on the other side of the urban area, you understand that. So I think that we, as a campus, we understand there needs to be a heart. And that was very clearly communicated throughout. I think that still exists. Does that not mean there is the opportunity for collaboration in other spaces where we've already invested on that side, so we can't just say we ignore it. But I think that we are very, very cognizant that if we're going to make decisions like that, we need to focus on the heart piece. So that's where decisions like the EKU Palm, which would bring an influx of students in that space, will stay in the heart of campus if that is under fruition. I think future growth would see infill on our main, the second.
Thank you. I don't think I knew that the state had requested us to move the model lab across the bypass. That's very useful to know. Thank you.
And we are working on widening with them as well. Obviously, that's a state roadway, and so widening that as well. But yes, that has been a long frustration of the state. And so when we were looking at that property at the corner and needing more utility access, we revisited that with their request, and that
really wanted that location to take a fair amount of quality. Thank you. Any other questions from the Zoom room or the in-person crowd here? Senator Satimi.
Yeah, so the master plan that they had shown everybody over in at the convocation, lots of new buildings and open spaces, and yet we're underutilizing it. So how is that going to work out?
Can you give me an example of that?
Well, I was looking at all the buildings that they're building around the College of Business and on the main campus here, and you were talking already about the fact that we have so much underutilized space. Are we just going to be taking out a whole bunch of buildings aside from the Moore and Memorial Science? Or?
Yes.
And then open spaces, I don't see students using any of them that we've got. The ones down by the little case and between Wallace and Powell, nobody's hardly, maybe some of them are eating lunch, but there's an amphitheater down there, never seen a person sitting there. And any other open space, there's an open space by in the rec center by the pool, nobody's sitting at those. And we're talking about opening up more spaces for them.
Well, I'll note that for them, but I will say that we did student and faculty feedback, and if I could say it would be one unanimous.
Well, yeah,
beyond any comment from both parties, it was flat outdoor space. So I think the question is, why is the space not getting used?
I love outdoor spaces too, but I don't get to go out very often.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions from the Zoom room or in person? All right, Colleen, I got to thank you for taking the time to talk with the state. It's always appreciated. And then if you can, is there any way to stop sharing your screen? There we go. And to keep matters moving, we're going to go ahead and kick it over to some new business with some policy updates. I do have to apologize. If you're looking at the version online, there's a note to the side. I wanted to make amendment. I don't want to correct it without anybody knowing. But what you're currently seeing on screen is not accurate. Actually, Ethan is with us today. He was kind enough to inform me that the information that I pulled on the website is a little outdated. So if you don't mind, would you want to go ahead and speak to...
Yeah, I will say everything that's listed there, they are relatively new updates, but they're not like the most recent. So if you look in the online agenda, John copied a list of what I would consider to be the most recent updates as of this semester. So if anyone has any questions on those, let me know. But those are accurate. They're just not the most up to date.
Okay. And then since we've been, like, even within the last couple hours, the policy, correct the language here, the annual review of tenure faculty has been open for the 10-day comment period. I know that's going to be one that a lot of people want to get their eyes on. I know there's kind of a metric and a rubric to it. So I will go ahead and after this meeting post the comment email that I do to you all. But I just want to let you know that that has been open for comment as of like maybe an hour ago is the most recent, correct?
Well, it's been open. The annual review has been on the website for a while. I sent a notification that it's coming to a close.
Right, okay.
So everyone still has time to comment tonight. If you have not had a chance to go and look on it, I believe it closes tomorrow. But all of the memos for each comment period are posted on the website, so you can see the start and the date and the end dates for those.
All right. Well, thank you. Any questions for Ethan before we move to the next business item?
I have a question. This is David Stumbo. Is there a reason why the sort of strikeout version of those policies isn't provided?
Which policies are you talking about?
I think that this is a comment. And correct me if I'm wrong, please, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But this comment has been coming through probably for about the last year.
Yes.
That any time that a new policy is hit or revised, the question is there any way, do you think, that we can catalog or somehow indicate on the policy what's changed, like a track changes with some strikeouts, with some underlines of what's been changed, so that way people... No, and I understand, like, I can't thank you enough for providing the memo of changes, but to actually see the word-for-word change within the policy, I think kind of would go a long way to help people understand what's being changed, not just a narrative summary.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I've gotten quite a bit of feedback from that. I know that's a conversation that has existed for I came on this semester of that desire. I absolutely agree that whenever it's practical and workable for us to do that, I would like for our office, now that we have... Prior to me, the policy work and production was a duty that was absorbed by our attorney staff. So I hope that me coming in, I'm looking at creating some new, whenever we start a drafting team, how do we start from the very beginning that we're preserving those draft changes? Now, in not every circumstance is that always going to be possible. For example, the three faculty evaluation policies, such as annual review, that have been up and we are trying to get moved to the Board of Regents meeting for approval under our House Bill 424 resolution. Some of those we have compliance deadlines we have to get to, so in that instance, we have to get it ready for the board. We actually were rushing to get to the comment period to work for that drafting team to work on that. Review that, and then we actually met again for our dismissal of faculty policy while we're in the comment period. So sometimes we're meeting tight deadlines, but I know that's something that whenever it's possible and workable to do so, I would like for our office to do.
Gotcha. And Senator Notway, I see you have your hand up as well, sir.
Yeah, I have a question as an observation. You know, there's 30 policies listed here. You know, anybody who's been on a policy drafting team, I mean, you know how tough it is to sort of account for, you know, potential unintended consequences of revisions to policies. You know, it's kind of a vexed process. And I guess maybe my question for Ethan is, you know, who's on the drafting committees of all of these policies? And how is it even feasible that we're going to have meaningful... Yeah, or I guess, you know, are we talking about truly editorial decisions about these? Because some of these policies as well are not minor. I mean, you know, dismissal of faculty, presidential evaluation. These are consequential policies that are just kind of getting, to my eyes, getting just sort of drawn through.
Yeah, so typically for whenever we're doing a substantial revision for a policy, who we call to invite to be on that drafting team depends on, you know, what type of policy it is and who the stakeholders for that policy is. So if it's an administrative regulation, we're looking at staff and potentially related people there. For example, our faculty evaluation policy, we have Lisa Kay leading that, and we have several faculty members.
Yes. And I don't mean to interrupt, correct me if I'm wrong, on the policy webpage, you all do a pretty good job of actually, right below the policy that's being reworked,
yes,
you actually identify who the draft team is and who is working on it.
Yes, so whenever we identify those drafting team holders, or those stakeholders that we invite to come join our drafting team, we post that publicly, the names of those faculty or staff members that are working on that. And usually, depending on what is needed, sometimes it's just a change of paragraph. If it's just an editorial revision, if we're updating a title or a link, we don't call a drafting team for that. It's just an editorial revision. But for a substantial revision, you know, we could have one meeting, we could have a couple different meetings. Usually, the policies, particularly, I keep referencing our faculty evaluation policies because those are the ones that have been such work this semester. But we've had several meetings since at least August, whenever I came on, where those groups have met, have reviewed, they've gone back and checked with other stakeholders that were not in that drafting team. So just to get extra feedback, I know some groups have, that have, they're looking into doing a survey question, checking with the provost office, checking with people in their departments. So it's whenever we rewrite sections or things where there's such a change to a policy, there's a heavy review that's taken there, and it's a review that's not in a vacuum with that drafting team either.
Now, do you think it would be possible, and this is just a purely theoretical conceptual question,
yeah,
in this process, like when you're going through it, I see draft teams meet, you kind of debate, you go back, you do the homework. The second that metaphorical pen meets paper, right, before it actually gets republished, you've got to work on the document. Do you think that there would be an opportunity moving forward to just have one of those standard operating procedures be, if it's going to be edited electronically anyway, to go ahead and post the revisions being made to the site along with when it is going up for comments so people can see the changes that were made real time to what's being posted along with, you know, the narrative memo that you send out? And this is purely an idea. I'm just trying to think about some...
The standard practice of what we do with policy 1.1.1 is... The goal would be, if we're able to do track changes and there's not changes there, is whatever revisions were made, we post it on the website. I know that there were some comments made about if, like, keeping a strikeout and things like that. Sometimes that's not always, and to my understanding and to the practices that our office has done before, that's not always possible.
Right.
And also, it just hurts readability. So if you cut out an entire section, I mean, even the legislative... the LRC, whenever something got, whenever an entire section is rewritten, they'll just start fresh. So,
gotcha.
So sometimes it's also, it just, it harms readability and can confuse people on what even is there. But I know that's something that we're trying to improve. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, perfect. That's my ignorance of kind of like the massive change, because I know, I don't know about you all, but usually when I write documents, I have to do track changes. I get lost in my own track changes more often than I don't, so I completely understand.
But are you talking in terms of like having it up on the website where you can see like who has made a specific?
No. Just like when it gets posted, like what's actually changed. So
yes.
You're yeah. So Senator Pfeiffer, I don't mean to keep you holding there. My apologies.
Confused about why the faculty senate
least the policies that would seem to directly affect faculty. I think if you were to ask somebody what the role of a body called faculty senate at a university would be, they would probably put that pretty close to the top of the list, that they would presume that we would vote on faculty policies. I'm not sure when we stopped doing that. I know that we used to, because I've been adjacent to the body for a while. And so when we stopped doing it, I think we should start doing that again. So I guess my question, and maybe this is a question to the chair, is what do we need to do to restore that process, that power? Is it a matter of changing faculty senate bylaws? Is it, you know, what are we missing?
Yeah, so to your first point, I completely agree. There's got to be a mechanism through which we can see the actual changes being made, and maybe a step one, right? So if we can't do what we're wanting, like strike-throughs, and I understand like track changes can get super convoluted, maybe a first step, and this is something we can look into, is just have both documents open up and just like post a comparison. I know that's pretty easy to do. You just have both documents, do a comparison between both. Now highlights, there's got to be an option moving forward on that. And then regarding this, the second point, there's hundreds of questions happening. So first, Senator Bishop Ross, were you going to speak to 1.1.1 in a second? We'll get to that. I figured that's where you were going with that. Senator Lauck?
This isn't Ethan's decision.
Yes.
He's on the hot seat right now because he's in his current position. But this has been an issue for well over a year.
Has been.
This has been this mystery that if our legislature can figure this out, this is not something that is, you know, a mountain that has to be moved. And the objection to the opposition has not come from Ethan. I'm assuming Dr. McFadden is not online at this point?
I don't think so. Let me check.
What about Colleen? Are you still there? We can't see people now. We're looking at the agenda.
I'm here, right.
Colleen, I think if you could pass on to Dr. McFadden that this has been an issue for over a year, and it's coming from multiple people. This is not an orchestrated campaign to get transparency. And just because people say we're being transparent doesn't make it transparent. If we want to see what a change in a policy is, we've got to see it. We need the background, the narrative. Clearly, that's exceedingly helpful and necessary. But let's just say what it is. People are trying to hide stuff when we don't see the strikeouts and the additions. It's only for the one purpose of hiding things. There's no other way to explain that away. It's not transparent, it's the opposite of transparent. So if you could tell Dr. McFadden that this is an issue coming up from multiple areas on campus simultaneously and in an unorchestrated way, that this is coming forth, and it's gotta come from him. He's gotta make that change. If he wants it, it'll happen. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Senator Lauck. And then Ethan, thank you for being here. Do we fully look?
Any other questions that I can?
And then Senator Bishop Ross, I know I was going to pivot to start talking about 1.1.1, primarily because that was a concern after, 2020, what was it, one over the summer it was passed, is there any way to push over the screen? So in 2021, there was a revision made to 1.1.1, and so as we talked about during the first act of the meeting, this was a charge that's being taken up by a couple committees to kind of look at what changed. The University Council Office was gracious enough to pass along the previous iteration and the current one. So with that, to just give some context of that, it is actually a working charge. I'll go ahead and pivot over and yield the floor to Senator Bishop Ross.
No, it's not.
process or another budget process. We're all in the budget process. Derail us from focusing on that and being able to get something done with it. And it's just sort of become a charm every year since then that we haven't been able to get any real movement on.
Accurate. Senator Stumbo?
I'd like to make a couple of motions. First, that we request that a markup version of policy be posted publicly as a body.
Second.
Open for discussion. Seeing no hands in the e-space or in the in-person room, we go ahead and move to vote on the motion to make changes publicly visible and available.
Is the motion to support
the authors make those changes available? We can't make them.
Right. Is it to encourage or to request that?
To flat out make them available.
Yeah. Because like you said, we're not the ones.
Right.
But it's our
position. So the motion to make changes to policy available.
Not necessarily track changes. I understand. So there is discussion.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's 100% discussion. I hear a lot of discussion.
I understand during the committee work, because I just have been on a committee where there are lots of track changes. We don't need to see all those. We just need to see them.
So I'm gonna ask the expert in the room, and I hate, like, thank you with my hands together for being here, because this is way above my pay grade and I don't know what I'm talking about right now. So with that, it could be said that the memo is the discussion of the changes, right? So, but what we're looking for is line item changes, correct? What's the best way to?
It's a standardized regulatory markup.
Okay, so a standardized markup of the changes.
Of the final policy changes that are going forward. We don't need to see the million of track changes from the committee work. We don't need that. Just the final draft of the policy changes that are going forward.
Senator Austin?
Yeah, just I think the confusion is like all the different ways to do it, but if we get to say, here's the original, here's the new one, and then here's how it's different. It doesn't, you know, because I think, but we just, it's impossible to know the changes, right? I mean, is this, that's the point,
Ethan?
Right?
That you need to visualize, see the changes through strikeouts and additions, whether they're in red or
Would those who are in the room of the new science please identify yourself before you speak?
That's why I'm trying to do my best. I try to say Senator Austin.
Thank you.
So, Ethan?
So, I've got a lot of questions.
Yes.
Not a chance to respond. So, first question I got. Why is this not possible compared to the way that has been conveyed to me and the way that I've experienced? Because in terms of who in our office is doing these changes and mark changes and handling the policy documentation, that's me, the one person. I will say this year has been an extraordinary year in terms of policy changes. Previously, when I was a graduate assistant in our office just the year prior, that year compared to this year has been night and day in terms of where we have prepared for our SAC COC. We basically had to review every single policy, particularly our academic policies, and get those ready to make sure that they were up to date for our report next year. So this year has been overwhelming in terms of just getting all of that done. So in terms of that, I do just want to make clear that our office and the handling of these policy matters is not one-to-one with, say, the LRC, which has dedicated staff to handle this and manage that. So I appreciate the desire to, I also recognize that this is not a conversation. I'm new coming onto the scene in terms of this discussion. So I appreciate your feedback, and I can absolutely take that back to my office, but I'm not the final say-so.
Thank you, Ethan. Thank you. Senator Pfeiffer. Oh, sorry, Senator Satimi, you had your hand up.
Just a quick note, I mean, in Microsoft Word, they have the review thing. If you don't want to see the markup, you just mark off. You can just turn it off, and you can look at the markup on it.
Right.
If they're all done on Word, which I'm sure they are all possible.
Typically, what we do is Google Docs, but I will say, again, this is part of the, when I'm looking at how our drafting team starts setting up the guidelines and making sure that those track changes are preserved, which is not, people generally try to follow, but it's not a good process.
Right.
If something can be missed. I will also say what we have done previously is, as you said, we've created a narrative summary in the memo, and of course, the previous existing policy has been up. It's still on the site, so you can compare the both of them.
Right.
So that's the way that it has been, that we've tried to adapt and manage that issue where we have so many policy changes coming in through a very small office.
Right. Senator Pfeiffer?
Sure, I don't mean to be snarky. I just want to state emphatically, in this forum, really kind of for the record, I'm sensitive to feeling overburdened and overworked and not having sufficient staff. But this seems to be, we've seen it make this more complicated than it needs to be. There is a document A, which is the policy as it stands right now. And then some human being is writing document B that contains the proposed changes. This should be a very simple process of just presenting both documents with the changes highlighted. And there's many different ways to highlight those, as simple as putting the changes in bold, putting them in a different color, highlighting them. I'm not sure why that would represent a significant increase in the work, but the work is already being done. We're just asking for that change to be visually emphasized. That's all we're asking for, and I think that is just fundamental to transparency. Thanks.
Senator Howell?
Okay, so someone commented that this is the way the legislature does it, and I love the legislature and the LRC, so I went and grabbed a random bill from the last session and dropped that in the chat. So I think Senator Stumbo was recommending, or his motion says, is we want the documents that come to us to review to look like the document I just dropped in here that has new text is in bold, stricken text is struck out. And if I make a friendly amendment to Senator Stumbo's motion, let's ask just the drafting team to do this, which is doable for two reasons. Number one, there are faculty on the drafting team who can do it. And also, the drafting team presumably would benefit from having a struck-through version of the text for them to look at before they approve it and send it on.
All right. Any other discussion from the Zoom meeting or in-person group? Senator Stevenson.
I'm just wondering, Ethan, if perhaps there is some fear of repercussions if something is missed, because I know that process is it's busy. You will miss something. So that's okay.
Yeah.
I would expect.
I think that there's two things of... when it comes with multiple changes, there is the transparency on both sides, that if there are changes that are made administratively that are marked changes, that there is something that is missed, that can also be seen as an issue of lack of transparency, which is in situations like the faculty evaluations where we're quickly getting them done for the board meeting. It's one of those things that we're keeping on.
All right. So we return to the motion. So the motion is still...
to require that all policy changes be posted publicly, showing all edits, strikeouts, and additions for transparency.
Is that could work with Matt Howell and suggest? He said he wanted to make an amendment to the... motion.
Senator Howell, can you clarify again what the amendment to the motion would be?
Suggest this as a friendly amendment. So, as I recall the process, that
which is that that whole amendment be done by the drafting teams. Sorry, the whole motion be done by the drafting teams, that they're the ones who should do the markup.
Is there a discussion?
Yeah, he said it was a friendly amendment, so he didn't. So open it.
So I'm just going to add this motion, or this will be completed by drafting team. Okay.
Discussion of the amended motion.
Did you read it again in its entirety?
So they were asking, can you read it again in its entirety? Thank you, Senator Sembo. That they should, in theory.
That's very fancy. I don't have that on my list. To require that all policy changes be posted publicly, showing all edits, strikeouts, and additions for transparency. This will be completed by the drafting team.
Senator Lout?
So I have a question that, Ethan might be able to answer. Because I may have a concern about consistency from drafting teams, but is there always a representative from the University Counsel's office on every policy drafting committee?
Usually we make an effort to, particularly now that I'm on board. I don't know previously, I know that on our faculty evaluations, we have Lisa Kay leading those teams, but that was prior to me coming on, so she was kind of appointed as the facilitator. Mm-hmm. But I know typically going forward, unless we have someone else that provost office or someone else is kind of someone in Lisa Kay's position, mm-hmm. It's usually a facilitator. Or Dana herself, or one of our other attorneys.
And is the question still to is the language still to require or to request that all policies be, because it's not a, it's not our decision.
Yeah.
We're advocating for this.
So here's the question. It sounds like we've got a lot of nuance happening here that might need to be worked out. Is this something that we table to get very clear parameters on, or just add to be vetted by counsel's office after this work will be done by drafting teams and vetted by counsel's office? Yes.
I will say, if I would recommend, if you all would like,
I'll take point of order. Who's speaking?
Ethan.
Apologies. A lot of different feedback. I think it would be helpful if you all would like, I could take that feedback, process it, and then get back to you, if that would be helpful. And also give you all time to consider as well.
Senator Notway?
I first of all wanted to highlight the fact that Senator Bosley is asking for the current text of the motion to be posted in the chat. I don't know if anybody saw that. I want to observe that, yes, voting on this motion that Senator Stumbo has put forward is essentially going to be symbolic because it would entail intervening in policy 1.1.1 that spells out how policy drafting teams are formed. But I strongly recommend that we continue forward and have a vote, and that we vote yes on it to express the will of the Senate. And I think we should be doing more of this sort of thing.
Thank you.
Who is this?
Senator Cetini.
Who is this motion being directed to? Is this going to the provost, or who is it going to?
Who does University Council of Honor? Senator Lauck.
I stated before, if David McFadden wants it done, it'll be done. I would argue that it's got to go to him.
Senator Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we directed the motion to the president. He is responsible.
responsible for supervising all of the other administrative staff. He will determine who would be best to implement it. So I think we send it to the president.
Thank you. All right, so are we...
embedded by who? I just missed that part.
University Council's office. So for one more time, can we have a reread of the motion before we kick it to vote?
I think that last part and there, that's not part of the motion.
Yes. Okay. I also just put it in the chat. To request that all policy changes be posted publicly showing all edits, strikeouts, and additions for transparency. This will be completed by the drafting teams embedded by University Council Office.
Senator Day.
I suggest that we remove everything after teams. I think if we vet this through the University Council, it's gonna take a long time. We're just at, because the University Council has already seen the policies.
Okay.
So I don't think they would need to see the two versions.
Okay. So strike out anything after teams. So the motion would be to request that all policy changes be posted publicly, showing all edits, strikeouts, and additions for transparency. This will be completed by the drafting teams. All right, can we go ahead and prepare a vote?
Yes.
And again, we'll send this via email and post it in the chat. Again, I highly recommend everybody sign into your EKU account while we're doing that. Senator Howell.
Sorry, I need to raise a point of order, but I believe the way our amendment process works is that we do need to vote on that last amendment.
Well, that was the previous amendment that was voted on. That was the previous amendment that was voted on before adding University Council. That was, yep, yes.
Eric Liddell's got some.
Senator Liddell, I don't see him.
Chat.
I've got the chat right here.
So the statement is that it's proposed prior to it being enacted because that would make it after the fact,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Yes.
So the statement would now read, to request that all proposed policy changes be posted publicly showing all edits, strikeouts, and additions for transparency. This will be completed by the drafting teams. We must take this to vote. So we have to bring a motion to approve the changes to the amendment. So I hear a second from Senator, or a first from Senator Stevenson, second from Senator Satimi, posting the vote to change the motion as it was read to the email and in the chat for vote.
So it was already made. Email sent out.
Disregard the previous, a new link will be sent to vote on the change to the motion. Ethan's like, I'm never coming back here. All right, everything should be posted, correct?
Yes.
And the motion passes. All right. So now with the motion passing to approve the change made to the motion, now we vote on the motion itself. Do I hear a Motion to vote on, or motion to approve.
Motion to vote.
We have to vote on to approve. We don't.
Okay. Yes, you have voted and seconded the amendment.
No,
now you have to vote
on the actual motion.
The actual motion.
So, do I hear a motion to vote on the motion to approve it?
Motion.
Senator Day, motion seconded by Senator Stevenson, and a new link to vote on approving the motion is now being sent out. Words mean things. We need track changes on the motion. True story. Only to keep me straight. By the way, everybody in the E-Space and still hanging out with me in person, I appreciate you for hanging in there with me. Approved, passes, approved. We will go ahead and pass that up. Thank you all for taking the time to work through that with me and your contribution to making the vote. Get a record of all that. All right. All right, moving on from policy work. Ethan, thank you so much for being with us. I can't thank you enough. It's appreciated more than you know. So moving on to point number two in the agenda, we're going to talk about some program closures. CA recently voted the two items that we needed to be that was brought before Faculty Senate were the closures to English and History teaching, the bachelor's and the undergrad, and then game design certificate. Those passed CAA. Those were marked for closure during last program review to allow faculty pivot towards enrollment strategies and other programs. After talking with the provost's office, we are going to bring it to make sure that you all voted to approve of the program closures as unanimously voted on by CAA. Do I hear a motion to approve the closures as unanimously voted on by CAA preceding our Faculty Senate meeting?
Just a moment. I did have...
Senator, sorry, is it...
Hi, yes, Senator.
Thank you.
I don't know if this needs to be a formal motion, but I would like some, I would make a motion to see some room made in the next Faculty Senate meeting to discuss Faculty Senate voting on faculty policy changes. I thought that was very important once that was brought up. And I think it's even more important than making the changes even. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
So say that one more time. I think it cut out on my side.
I'd like to make a motion to make changes to
Faculty
Senate voting on the next Faculty Senate meeting to discuss Faculty Senate voting on faculty policy.
All right. I see Senator Notway.
Yeah, just to interject, I think what Senator Wright Albright is saying is that to discuss policy 1.1.1 to actually really formally engage in that process. If I can confirm with you, Rachel, that was you know right where you were going with that.
Yeah, I'm here.
I think that that's what she meant was you know to. Really codify that that's going to come up specifically as an agenda item.
Absolutely. Okay.
Changing the policy, and not just vaguely changing the policy, but specifically revisions of policy 1.1.1 to return decisions relevant to the faculty back to the Faculty Senate for up or down votes.
That isn't exactly what I meant, but if that is the direction that I would love to see the discussion go.
Okay, and then.
Okay. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, I mean, I agree, but I don't even have tenure yet, so I wasn't going to make such a big plan.
All right, and then following the hands of Senator Pfeiffer.
So on this note, with that conversation had occurred, could I be so bold as to make that motion for the addition of some pretty specific language?
Wait, so we already had one motion. So we already had one motion on the floor to follow orders.
Yeah, fair.
So is there a motion to bring the discussion of policy 1.1.1 for review during next faculty senate meeting? Do I hear a motion?
So,
So Senator Pfeiffer moved, seconded by, is that Senator Notway?
Senator Howell.
Senator Howell, my apologies. Open it up for discussion. Senator Merrick?
So I know some of the senators are new, but rights and responsibilities, we did have 1.1.1 brought before the Senate, and that has been discussed already. I feel like we're beating a dead horse, which is, it's fine if we want to have that conversation. But then every time we have a new senator come in, we'll have to have that conversation again. I don't foresee it changing. It's just my personal opinion. Because I don't agree with it doesn't mean I'm okay with it, but rights and responsibilities has gone into great detail into that policy. And it kind of comes back to, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to change.
Okay.
Just my opinion.
And then, Senator Day, I know you had your hand up as well. No, all right, no hand up, that was my apologies. Senator Pfeiffer.
I think I make a motion to add a specific language to use.
So we still have to vote on the motion, correct?
Oh, sorry, yeah, you're right. Let me read it out first.
So here's the question, are you making an amendment to your motion? To the original motion that 1.1.1 be brought up during next faculty senate meeting for further discussion and review.
I suppose that I am, yes. I would amend that we specifically discuss adding faculty senate to part 2E of policy 1.1.1.
To add faculty senate to 2.B?
Yes, it would be in policy 1.1.1, section 2, line B, adding the words faculty senate to that paragraph.
I think this is two different motions.
Yeah, this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so we got to go back to the original motion for it to be talked about during faculty senate.
We just don't talk about it. That's the motion.
So I heard a second, we were opening it up for discussion, and I saw Senator Stumbo, did you have your hand up on that one?
Well, it seems like it's a little convoluted right now, so let's get straightened out on our motion.
So right now the motion that is currently being voted on is still standing that 1.1.1 be brought to Faculty Senate during next meeting for further review and discussion, that's it. Senator Kraska?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up, there are a new long time, I was just going back and forth, but I don't know how to deal with it. I don't have any problem talking about it again, and I don't have any problem maybe pushing it forward a little bit harder than we have in the past. I mean, I don't want to scare our leaders, but it is a bit of a different environment right now than it was a year ago
Any other discussion to bring 1.1.1 to Faculty Senate for further review and discussion during the next meeting? Seeing no hands, Senator Stevenson.
Sorry. Is there a way that we could bring in kind of a quick review of one page brief?
So part of that would be, part of that would be because it's owned, but we have committees that have that charge to them that they would probably lead that discussion during the next meeting.
Here's what we talked about. Can we look at it from a different angle?
The standing committees that are charged with it, they'll pretty much help usher us through that conversation.
That would be great.
Senator Mayor.
And I'm for it. I don't like it. I'm not happy about it. We found out what happened. We all have this really bad taste in our mouth. I just want people to know that we have looked at it before. It's probably going to be something that new senators are probably always going to wonder until it changes why we don't have a say.
Okay.
And share governance.
Absolutely. Thank you. Any other Senator Satini?
I move to lay the motion on the table.
Do I hear a... So seconded by Senator Stevenson. Discussion to table...
There's no discussion.
Thank you. For
there's a second. The chair will call for vote on motion. Discussion not allowed.
Yeah, now we'd like to have a vote.
A vote. All right, so.
Lay it on the table.
But the vote is to table.
Thank you, brought up again. That's
all right, so.
Real quick point of order. I just want us to all know what we're talking about because in some context, tabling means different things.
So it's being postponed to talk about at a later date.
Okay, all right. So we need to have the date that we're going to take it back up the table as part of the motion then.
There's no discussion on this. It's a motion.
This is not discussion. This is a point of order.
So the question is, when is it going to be brought back up?
Well, that's up to whoever wants to bring it up again. It doesn't have to be brought up.
Within the motion that needs to be voted on, there is no date that this has to be brought up. Nope.
So back again with the point of order, my understanding is that we can table indefinitely, but we need to say that we're tabling indefinitely.
From my understanding, you're tabling it until it gets brought back up again.
Yeah, laying on the table set aside temporarily.
Yes. Yeah. Not indefinitely.
Yeah, just
until the next time it's brought up.
Somebody wants to bring it up.
With no specified date, not indefinitely, just till it gets brought up again. That is the vote.
Not killing it.
That is the vote that is going out. It's going to go out through email and your chat.
Okay, so I have tabling future discussion. Of about having a policy change for students to be no specified date.
Still waiting on votes to roll in.
Yeah, there's 61% yay, 27% nay, 10% abstain, but they're still coming in.
Okay. What's the number for yay?
Six.
What's the actual count for yay? Do you know? Yes. Yeah. We have a quorum to vote, so that's what's voted on. So it motion passes the table until it gets brought up again. Yes. All right, so pivoting back to the discussion point about program closures, there's a motion to review and approve of CAA's decision to close English and history teaching and game design, given the unanimous vote to close those programs after last year's program review. Do I hear a motion? Or, yes. So CAA met recently, and they voted to approve the closure of these two programs. Based off of last year's program review, it's already made its way through the process. Just to make sure it runs through Faculty Senate, one of the steps is it goes through us and it goes up to the Provost President's Office and the Board of Regents. So one of its next steps is that it comes through Faculty Senate for review and vote. Based off of all the work that's been done, the program review cycle and everything else. So is there a motion to approve of the closure of those programs? Moved by Senator Stevenson. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Second by Senator Sistemi. And discussion? All right, moving it to vote. Sorry about that. Senator Notway?
I'll recommend we vote no. I know that the English and History Teaching program in particular was for closure over the objections of the department and the work of the department. So, I mean, again, I think, I don't know that our vote would carry any consequence, but, and I will confess, I was not aware that the Human Science Certificate
and Senator Howell?
Just as the Senate's representative on the CAA, I wanted to relate the conversations had at CAA for your benefit before we vote on it. The proposal to close the English history teaching did come out, was presented by the class associate dean, and there was not much discussion on that. I did ask some questions about the game design certificate, and
I believe that was marked as low enrollment during the last program review as well.
Yes, what dealt with was that the certificate implicated other things that were doing that were going on in the degree itself, and so that's why they wanted to remove the certificate because it was important. So that was what was discussed at the CAA meeting, and that's all. I just wanted to inform people of what was discussed at the meeting.
All right, and it should be posted for voting to your inbox as well as the chat. Everybody, one more minute to make sure you get your votes in. We'll end it at 5:06, just to make sure everybody has their chance to get their votes in, and you know when to vote by.
52% no, 34% yes, 13% abstain. nothing to
carry. All right, the motion does not carry forward and pass. All right, moving on to topic number three is the work being done with essential education and the change to general education by and large. Some updates on that. It's gone through the provost cabinet. It's gone through the dean's council. It's most recently, the chairs were all put together and asked to send it back to our departments. It was instructed that the chairs take it back to the departments, kind of collect faculty feedback and collect data on the move from 36 to 30 hours, whether they supported the original version or the flex version, as well as the move to a 4-day instructional week. And at each level of those voting, it was supported at the cabinet level, at the dean's level, and I believe I have the data on it. 60% of the chairs that reported back demonstrated support for, I want to make sure I get this right. So I'm going to give me 1 second. I'm going to open up a screen for us. All right. So regarding the move to 30, I'm going to show you the data so I don't share screen. This is what the data looked like for the Does Your Department Program Support the Transition from 36 to 30 Hours? 61% of the chairs reported yes, 17% reported no, and another roughly fifth reported no preference. Regarding the type of program, whether it be the original iteration or the flex version, give me 1 second, my apologies.
John, was that 20? That vote that you just put up there, was that 23 responses? Was that chairs or was it?
Chairs. Yeah, chairs.
We sent to 27 chairs and okay. We have either, I thought we had 24 responses.
Well, and then looking at which program, roughly 70% supported the flex program, almost 9%. Supported the original iteration, and another fifth reported no preference. And then let me go ahead and get the diagram for the instructional week as well, so everybody can see the data that came through on the chairs council on that. Regarding the 4-day work week is what everybody should be looking at. Roughly 61% reported yes, a fifth said no, with another 17% reporting no preference. So at every iteration after leaving the EETC work group, the Gen Ed model has garnered support, most recently with the chairs, with over a majority of the vote supporting, again, the move to 30, the flex program, and the 4-day instructional week. Let me pull back open the agenda here so I can keep us on track. With that, are there any, this is just an informational update, nothing to vote on, nothing pressing going through at this time. It will be voted on during next faculty senate meeting, and then moving after that, it kind of goes up the chain from there. Senator Howell.
Yeah. So we have talked about a motion on this. I thought I'd be breaking new ground today. We're not. Do you want to do that now?
Look, we've worn up the motion phase. So I figured if you're gonna make a motion now, we have the process pretty refined at this point. We're ready for it.
Awesome. All right. I have fancy written up thing, but I think our process has been oral. My motion.
I do have the document if you need me to share it.
If you have a document, can you put the document up?
Yes, I do. Let me make sure it's the right one we're pulling up here. Senator Howell, can you just verify from my screen that this is the iteration that you would like to be presented?
This is the correct iteration.
Thank you. I'm trying to get it on one screen for everybody to see. I'm working on it. There we go. There we go.
Was, you know,
I do hear somebody in the background. I don't know if you want to. Oh, it's gone. So, Senator Howell, broad brushstrokes, what's the motion for?
Thank you. Sure. The broad stroke of the motion is that the fact the Senate would like to investigate this 3-hour and draft a proposal in more detail to develop a curriculum basis for it, and that I should look in UJEC and in CAA to delay this until we have time to do that investigation, rather than vote yes or no, up or down.
And just to be clear, there's no vote on the EETC work. There's no vote being brought before you regarding Gen Ed at this point. The only thing that's happened was the forum that took place, the most recent survey that went out to the chairs that found support, and it will be retaken up during the next faculty senate meeting. So just to be clear, there's no vote on the docket regarding EETC right now.
Yeah, this is purely about the meeting this upcoming Thursday at UJEC and the following Thursday at CAA. It's how I should go through those meetings.
What is UJEC?
University Gen Ed Committee. Yes.
Should I have the motion as to approve the general education reform or just to delay? Motion to delay.
So Matthew, the question is to delay the votes.
Yes, let's put it that way for right now, to delay the votes.
So to delay UJEC's, the University General Education Committee's vote on the essential education transformation model.
Yes.
Point of order.
Not yet. We're literally just working out the words of the motion.
Okay. And there's a request to have the motion posted in chat.
Yes. Is there any way to, when you capture that, can you post that in the chat for review?
Yeah, actually, that's a great
idea. Senator Notway, that will be posted in the chat for everybody. Thank you.
We're not on Zoom. We don't
capture. Is there any way to drag that screen over?
There we go. Why aren't you voting on that resolution?
Senator Howell, the question is why pivot to delay the vote instead of just voting on the resolution brought before Senate?
I'm happy to talk about that. So the story behind this is that I had asked to have some method of knowing what the Senate wants to do with this, and various committees trying to take stabs at it and couldn't get to a consensus on what to do. So they said, let's just put it to the committee. The reason why this is phrased as a delay to it is because in the earlier discussion, we were talking about what is a reasonable ask of the administration and delay until we can actually look at the curricular benefits was what was considered a reasonable ask in some of the meetings that did not come to conclusions. This is very important, is that the committees did not pass anything out, which is why we're doing this just a me making a motion thing. And so that's why it's phrased the way it is, but I am perfectly happy for people to amend it to, again, give me a sense of what the Senate wants to do.
Senator Notway?
Senator Howell, if there's a delay in sending it to CAA, that might delay rolling it out in fall of 2026. That has been expressed. I just wanted to clarify. I mean, that is a distinct possibility, right? If there's any delay in this.
The possibility exists, but the
Again, these are not things that came out of the committee. These are just conversations I've had with other people talking about this. The people who are going to be affected by the change in Gen Ed are going to be freshmen. Freshmen won't register until after the May meeting, and we can call a special CAA meeting if we need more time to approve it once we have some sense of, again, what the curriculum impact and justification of this is. Again, part of what's driving this is I want the Senate's view on this. Another thing driving this is there have been repeated questions for what is the curricular effect of this? Is this making Gen Ed better or worse, or are we doing this because we can? And those questions haven't been answered, and the reason has always been, well, we gotta get it done because the meet and vote is coming up in November, and I think that's a ridiculous argument because we can hold a special call meeting and we can register freshmen in June even if we vote on this in May. But I think we can have this to the Board of Regents by the first spring meeting. Like, the investigation question is not demanding or asking a whole lot. It's just talk to the people who think this is gonna benefit them and get them to say on the record, this will benefit us.
Senator Bishop Ross. Senator Cetini.
What will happen to this resolution? I mean, if we pass this motion, the resolution that you drew up, what becomes of that? Is it just city? Is it just going to be for us to look at? Is it going anywhere? Or?
Well, I believe we were just asking for short terms. We didn't have to type the whole thing into the chat. So we have like a short title over here, which is motion to delay until our investigation is complete. But the document in front of you is the motion that I'm asking you to vote on. And all it does is give me the ability to say, I brought this up in Senate, and X number of senators said this, and X number of senators said not this. And my hope is that by being able to say that the Senate, which is the record, which is the interface between administration and the faculty, went on record and said this is what the faculty believe is best.
So I have just two questions. One is
Gomez. Yeah.
Yeah. Would delaying it impact? Would we delay the our decision? Would that impact course availability or scheduling for the fall? I mean, if we delay it all the way to May, how would that impact programs deciding which courses to offer? And also, I mean, again. Maybe it's just I don't know much about it, but point five mentions that whereas the curriculum changes did not originate within faculty. I mean, it's been my understanding that it's been a committee, a Gen Ed committee for over a year working on this. Can somebody just maybe explain that? Or
yeah, I could chime in on that, but Senator Austin, go ahead. No, please.
Well, the change from 36 to 30 is top down. I mean, so we were given, I'm not on the committee, but having conversations, the parameters set for us. So it didn't originate with faculty. The faculty didn't say we want to reduce from 36 to 30. So basically said that's what administration and President McFadden want, and by this date, which goes to the resolution that it's remarkable to me, all these decisions. I mean, just one example. So in the meetings, we were told in the forums that there was strong support from faculty to reduce Gen Ed hours. And then that's just from 36 to 30, which just wasn't true. The question was, if you could make one change to EKU's Gen Ed program, what would it be? 118 people responded, 22 suggested a reduction of hours in some form. Three of those referred to the 30 hours target. The rest said other stuff. So this is another thing about transparency and let's have a conversation. And I'm not sure I should care what 60% of chairs say. I'd like to know what all the faculty say and all the departments. I want to like hard numbers from the faculty because we're the ones that know what happens in the classroom. And so our agenda, this does not align with our benchmarks, it doesn't align with our aspirational institutions. And if you want to look at the skills and the things that actually are going to help students, Gen Ed's a part of that. So I know there are pressures in some programs, but I'm getting a little worked up. I'm just so this is just another example of if we're just going to do this to market ourselves as you can take less Gen Ed, let's just say that, have that conversation. If it's really about excellence, then why does it have to be done by August? Let's actually be excellent and take another year. We're not in some urgent time crunch, so let's try to figure out, according to this resolution, what's best for our students. Well, that's more than you asked, but I got home. So, sorry.
Senator Lapp?
No, I think that point is absolutely correct, that this got dropped on us at convocation from the president, and now granted, exceptional faculty are involved in the committee, but I argued it's flawed from its inception because of how it was conceived. And if I'm not mistaken, the president has said he wants to get it right, not specifically by a particular time frame. I thought he had backed off of that, making that alliance.
He did.
Okay,
yeah,
I thought so.
Like that.
Senator Noblet?
I did speak with him, and he was more interested in getting it right than getting it wrong. So I misread.
Now, the one thing I do have to shed light on, I've been through these meetings, I've been on the EETC group, went through the gen ed meetings, Garrett, we were there. There's a lot of discussion that's happening to where the process and the actual model are becoming convoluted, right? So I think a lot of people are expressing concern about the process, the parameters that were passed down regarding marketability, meeting program needs while meeting SACS requirements. However, I think it's a little misleading to say that what you're currently voting on is not faculty driven at that point. Yes, parameters were given to us. However, what was researched extensively by the EETC group, there are multiple models that were presented. There are multiple concepts about what gen ed could look like that were presented. We went and talked to stakeholders on campus. There was forums that were opened up. There were work groups that opened up. This was sent back to faculty. Chairs were asked to report back on it. Various open forum sessions were held regarding it, and so to say that it wasn't faculty involved, I got to push back a little bit, because once the parameters were given, there was no oversight from administration, right? So never once did the provost or the president's office step in on this and say, hey, this is what needs to be done, or this is what it needs to look like. This was purely driven by the EETC group in collaboration, and then it was kind of like the process went through the gen ed, and that's kind of where we're at right now. And so I think it's very important to us to understand that if we're going to take up this issue, that we review the policy, or not the policy, my apologies, the process through which this is happening, which of course that's calling into question the transparency, the shared governance that's kind of been expressed throughout. However, there's a difference in what you're actually voting on, because when we went and talked to departments, overwhelmingly, as by these data say, and you could say, oh, well, there's apathy and people think that it's going to go through, whatever. But people were actually very excited about the fact that the move to 30 hours would give 2 credits back to certain departments that didn't have electives, that would give a bigger front porch to programs' doorsteps when in time and enrollment was kind of the rule of the day. There was also talks that this scheme would actually fit larger external circumstances, the move to 120 hours across all universities, that the current model, given the EETC's work and research on how it would fit within that, kind of like met those parameters. The fact that this actually still aligns with what our accreditation standards meet. So when you actually step back and you separate the process through which this is occurring and the benefits that are actually being reported by chairs, by the people that did the work, by the stakeholders that the EETC group actually talked to, there is a hesitancy for me to say this. There is no benefits to this. The group that actually pushed this forward found a lot of benefits within that. I think that's what's coming through a lot of the evaluations and surveys that you're seeing, that you constantly see support for this model. On that note, I did see I didn't see the hand who went up first. Well, just the first one on the screen, Senator Diekman.
The 30 hours I think has been discussed multiple times, but the flex option, the first time I heard about it was in October.
Senator Howell.
On the specific topic of the originating faculty, that comes from just looking over what the normal process would be for curriculum changes, which say that normally it would originate in departments is where these types of changes should originate. And so originating, even setting aside how much intervention there's been from the administration, having this proposal originated in the Essential Education Transformation Committee is unusual and not normal by our standard procedures. So that's what I was trying to get at with that line. But again, I am perfectly happy to have it amended or discussed in other ways.
All right, so we've had discussion, so we go back to taking it to vote on the resolution as it stands on the screen.
Oh, it's gonna add this part about per the document shared by Senator.
So Senator Howell, are we sticking with the delay, or are we amending the motion to be that faculty senate is to vote on the document, the resolution on the screen?
I am under the impression we are voting on the document on the screen. I'm not aware of any amendment that has been made to it. I take what is over in the chat to be a short title for this document.
You see the chat?
Can we move the chat? Okay. All right. The ballot is being prepared, and again will be sent to your email as well as in the chat for voting.
Set.
I know, I'm watching. What we'll do is I'll put a cap on it. So at 30, I'll have to make a motion to extend the meeting. So we'll go ahead and close the voting at 30.
I've got that motion ready.
Okay.
We're at 42 already. And
okay.
79% said yes.
So the motion to approve the resolution passes. All right. And given the time of where we're at, I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing my screen, move to the agenda so you all can see what's left, and I will yield to the popular opinion of the floor. When we take a look at the rest of the agenda, we still have the discussion of the four-day instructional week, an upcoming lunch and learn, which is for tomorrow, a few matters of ongoing business as it relates to updating electronic meetings, AAUP faculty representation criteria, the composition of faculty senate, and then standing committee reports. So keeping all of that in mind, I make a motion to extend the meeting to 6 o'clock p.m. Otherwise, yes.
Is the chair, can you make a motion?
He's a voting member of the faculty.
I don't, does somebody want to make the motion? Because I know I did it for Senator Kate previously.
Senator Ross, I'll make the motion to extend the meeting until 6 o'clock.
All right. A second.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing none. Sending it to vote. Given the items on the agenda, this is not going to concluded by 6 o'clock.
You will guess.
You need a few more. We have 23 that have said yes so far.
So motion passes to extend till 6 hours. I thank you for that. All right, so moving on to the next point of business, I'm gonna try to expedite some of this. The next just update in general, we've already talked about, was the move to a 4-day instructional week. Again, this went through the cabinets, this went through the deans, so it was most recently reviewed by chairs. Again, the talking points on this are currently ongoing regarding spatialization, the need for high specialty rooms. Those are conversations that continue to be assessed. There's not much more as an update on that. Senator Satimi.
Has there been discussion about the academic side of it, the quality of instruction on that sort of schedule?
So there's been, depending on what you're talking about, there's been everything from what's gonna happen to Fridays regarding faculty, there's gonna everything to what is the student body gonna do on Fridays. Is Thursday going to become basically the new Friday? Can Friday be used as a student engagement period? So those conversations are currently ongoing with trying to figure out the best way to maximize the Friday, given various reasons, both professional, academic, and student related. Yes,
second,
Senator Satimi.
I've heard from older faculty, more senior faculty, that this Tuesday, Thursday, Monday through Thursday was formally done years ago, and then they went away from it.
So I can say I was part of the scheduling work group a few years back, and this was a model that produced overwhelming support across the board.
No, it was enforced at KU previously, and they got rid of it.
Okay.
You have a flip Friday.
So it's a flip Friday. It's a flip Friday or something.
And I see from the crowd, Senator, is it Senator Houston?
Yeah, I think, can you hear me?
Yes. Got it. Yeah, that's what they were saying in the room. So he said it wasn't, then it wasn't really a 4-day schedule, it was a 3-day schedule because of the flip Friday.
Yeah, Friday was different depending on the week because you still had classes. If you were on a Monday, Wednesday flip, or if you were on a Tuesday, Thursday flip, or some faculty had class every Friday, some faculty had class every other Friday.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And of course, as the information gets released and it gets sent my way, I will be sure to pass that through faculty senate email. Keep everybody abreast of what's going on if anything develops prior to our next meeting. The next item is the lunch and learn is actually scheduled for tomorrow noon in the Chase Regents room. We're going to basically be talking about everything that's externally happening at EKU and how it's forecasted to impact not only students, but our programs, university, financial budgets. We're going to be talking about, of course, House Bill 4, which isn't done, House Bill 424, affecting promotion tenure moving forward, budgeting both at a national and state level and how that's going to impact the university, and just given the overall legislative constraints regarding updates to curriculum. As we know, there seems to be a push to standardize curriculum across states. We saw with the recent legislation that seems to be prioritizing community college curriculum and how that's going to affect us. So after talking with the president's office, we thought a good talking point for our current lunch and learn would be to focus on everything that's happening externally to the university and how it's affecting our internal policies and procedures. Some ongoing business. Senator Bishop Ross is still with us, I see you on the screen. We're doing some updates to the Faculty Senate bylaws, and Senator Bishop Ross is kind of the subject matter expert on that, so I will yield the floor to her to talk about updates regarding e-meetings and the AAUP representative criteria.
Guidelines that Robert Rules has for online
I thought I had it linked, but if it wasn't in there, perhaps it was missed. Okay. And that I do have to apologize. I can say that Heather and Senator Bishop Ross have done a tremendous amount of work on that. So that's something that if it's that we can then move to vote on during the next meeting. Thank you, Senator Bishop Ross. Faculty Senate composition, the committee has been doing a ton of work scrubbing what our Faculty Senate composition looks like. Our next steps is to actually whittle down, because our Faculty Senate body from the report that was released is a little larger than what we currently need to, given the downsizing of the university, some consolidating of programs. So the next step on that is gonna be to streamline the composition of Faculty Senate. Planetarium updates, I don't really have anything on unless Senator Knobbert, Regent Knobbert.
I'll just quickly say that originally it was thought that we would vote on the planetarium, pay the planetarium, whether we would approve the exterior improvements to that at the November meeting. The board chair and president, I believe, both decided to move that to the February meeting. So we'll be no vote, and that's why it was not included.
Okay, and again, if you didn't hear that, the vote to make updates regarding the planetarium or the type of update to moving forward will be postponed from this meeting to February, correct?
Yes.
All right. And again, the opportunity to engage in collaborative learning informational sessions with the FICTL or for OASIS regarding AI is always open. If you all have any questions or concerns, or if you have any topics that you want to be pursued, please do not hesitate to let us know, and we can go ahead and start scheduling those with appropriate offices across campus. Standing committee reports. Again, every time I report with you all, it's just kind of what the executive committee we talk about. So then I pivot to the academic quality committee. I know that that committee's got quite a bit of work to do, so I yield over to, I see Senator Yoder in the room, so I'm going to point to his direction.
I'm afraid I don't have the minutes in front of me. Is Senator Campbell here?
Senator Campbell, are you in the East Space by any chance?
I am.
All right.
So we met early. I think I actually reported on our updates the last time we sent a meeting. So we'll be meeting again next week, continuing to work through those charges. We had some rich conversation regarding the gen ed changes. As Senator Powell alluded to, is one of those spaces that's we're continuing to trench through all those charges.
All right, thank you so much. And the budget committee, I know you already submitted your report. Anything?
I thought
you did. Okay, my apologies. So, Senator Lauck for the budget committee update.
We met on the 22nd, went through the charges in a little more depth, really focusing on the net revenue by program issue. Emily Waters, the budget director, gave us an appreciation. The level of complexity in that, and we did not come to any conclusions, but just a better understanding of some of the issues. We kind of skipped over Booksmart, knowing that there was going to be a recommendation of some type coming from another committee, which we apparently now have, and we'll be meeting again on the 19th of November.
Perfect, thank you. Pivoting to the Election and University Nominations Committee, co-chair Senator McDonald and Sizemore. Is Senators McDonald or Sizemore in the meeting space?
I'm here.
All right.
We did meet last week, corresponded, and we just came up with a list of dates that we'll be meeting throughout the semester. No new business other than that. Senator Sizemore, myself, will be co-chair for this committee.
All right, thank you. And the ever important IT committee led by Chair Senator Jin.
So we have now three contacts from IT because one contact for the multi-factor authentication methods. So we're going to be collaborating with them, revising the survey to make sure that it makes sense, you know, from their end as well. They are very much wanting to collaborate and want the data. So we will revise that, collaborate that, and then get with the executive committee this semester. And then we're also going to be collaborating with them about cost and just problem solving with the proctoring and different the other proctoring services. We're figuring out what do we currently have available, cost, and because their insights were that you don't want to have too many of those because then you're often double paying for the same proctoring. So right now, I don't even know what I'm talking about. We need to have another meeting. But I do know enough to know that more discussion is to come.
I can tell you that if you tackle the authentication process on campus as well as locking down online integrity, you will get a win for the year, that's for sure. Pivoting to faculty rights and responsibilities, we have Chairs Senator Jin and Senator Notway.
Can give a quick update. We are currently working on, we have compared, NKU has what's called a faculty advocate, and we are proposing a document that we would like to present again to the executive committee. I'm a little late to Dr. or Senator Satine. But we're going to propose that to the executive committee first to go along with the faculty grievance liaison, except that we're proposing that the advocate comes from faculty senate.
Perfect.
So you'll get that soon, and then we're also going to be reaching out to Senator Kay, or she's not Senator Kay anymore, but Dr. Lisa Kay, about policy 1.1 and just making sure any work we're working on that is in line with what they're doing on the drafting committee.
Perfect. And rules, Senator Bishop Ross, was there anything else you wanted to add on to what was reported on previously?
No.
And last, faculty welfare, Chair Jansky. Perfect. Thank you. Is there anything else that you need from that? I know as John Dixon releases information, we'll definitely pass that along. But as you know, that those conversations are still kind of ongoing.
Yes, I would be hesitant. All I know is that it's sort of back up and running at least for a year.
Yeah, from our last meeting, Senator Lack, I know the budget committee, we briefly talked about it, and they came back with a more attractive offer that was kind of fitting the usage and the finances with that. So like you said, Senator, that's definitely still ongoing. So that's good news because I know that was a point of concern for many. All right, any final questions or comments? Senator Lack.
I would just like to encourage everyone to attend Regent Nomlet's happy hour with the chair on the 20th, right?
Because she's hosting it. Regent, I heard Regent Nomlet is hosting the event.
It will be coffee, tea, and water.
Because all these issues of transparency and process, the Board of Regents has no public comment time like every school district in the state has. This is an opportunity to speak directly to the chair.
Got it. Thank you for that, and we'll push out a reminder about that.
Doing that.
Senator Graham?
Yeah, I just have one comment for the wellness. We were discussing in the conversation about how we can use recruitment to impact our benefits because if you are getting 9 hours of free tuition, you now have to pay for your textbooks. So I just
So that was, can you repeat that so we can have a note on our side one more time? Okay, got it. Perfect, thank you, got that noted. Yes, perfect, thank you so much. Any other final questions or comments? All right, do I hear a motion? So Senator Satine, motion to adjourn. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Gomez, and... No, I think it was... Thank you all so much for hanging in there. If you have any questions or concerns, I'm sure I've missed something, just send them along and we'll get to work.